And you'll never be put in the back of a KCMO police car either. They don't do that.
I was at the light up here at 39th and Broadway one night, pretty late at night, waiting for the light to turn green. And across from me was a KCMO patrol car that was, you know, heading east on 39th Street. And coming,
you're heading west?
I'm heading west, coming up Broadway. And this was, it was probably 3 in the morning, right when the bars had closed. There are these two hipster-looking youngsters in this little Garth-mobile-looking thing. And the guy went to turn right, and he drove right into one of those pitch dispensers. And I'm looking at him, and then I'm looking at the cops, and the cops kind of like look at him like, go home. You're drunk. Don't make me pull you over. And I'm just like, God, in any other place in America, you're done. I love this town.
It's definitely all right. It's a minute after an hour right here on Community Radio in the 21st Century. I got some things to play. I'm going to go fill my coffee cup up here on Community Radio in the 21st Century.
Did you know that you can donate your unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI Radio and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling KKFI at 816-931-3122. This is Pat Fisher from Kansas City, a volunteer for 90.1 FM KKFI, our community radio station.
Nobel laureate Gerald Edelman speaks about the brain on Exploration, Monday morning at 5.
Come celebrate live music at KKFI with KKFI's CD Release Party Times 2 with two great music makers, Nashville recording artist Three Bricks Shy, playing here in the background, and Nashville recording artist Bill Kleppel. We'll have CDs to release, refreshments to imbibe, and a party going on. That's Thursday, March 13th, 7 p.m. at the KKFI Party Room. Only 5 measly bucks at the door. See you there.
When you become slippery, slippery, slippery slope. I feel me slipping in and out of consciousness. I feel me slipping in and out of consciousness. I feel me.
That sounds pretty good. 11 minutes after the hour of two, right here on Community Radio in the 21st century. I'm Benjamin. This is the Paragon Radio program. If you'd like, you can call in 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. You could email the show, paragonradio@gmail.com. You could go to gofindtheothers.com. You could also go to gofthelisteners.org. paragonradio.org, or you could go to paragonradio.blogspot.com. Go F the listeners.org right here on community radio in the 21st century. What are you guys showing pictures of over there?
The secret.
Well, come on. I don't like secrets.
No, no, like you already seen them. I was just book. Catching Jesse up.
The secret. Oh, yeah. The power of positive thinking.
Right. It's my affirmation wall.
That's how he does it.
Visualize.
So I'm looking at, you know, news stories this last week. This one caught my eye. Canadian guilty of sexual assault after piercing condoms. You've heard of this before, haven't you?
Oh,
where
yeah.
people will take like a thumbtack or whatever and then pierce through the condom. So
it's got to be some kind of ultra right wing Christian thing.
The little swimmers get through. But it was a guy that was doing it. That's the really creepy thing.
Hater.
Why is that creepy?
Because it.
Is that something girls traditionally do?
Right. Don't girls normally want babies? Guys never want babies. Every guy is all like, yeah, I want a baby. I mean, you don't have any kids. You know, me and Jake, we understand this. Guys don't actually want kids until they're forced into it, and then they just accept the reality of it. It's like, you know, my buddy's wife's telling me before they had their first kid, she's like, he's just not ready. And I was like, he's never going to be ready. You just have to get pregnant and he'll deal with it. That's how guys work. Kind of guys all like, yeah, I'm going to clandestinely get my girlfriend pregnant by poking holes through a condom. Yeah. I mean, especially because not only this guy is such a loser, she took his ass to court.
Oh, wait.
So she found out. She was having sex with the guy.
Was she saving all the bags?
No, she got pregnant.
Yeah, but how did she know that there were holes poked in it?
Because he told her.
Oh.
On her way to the abortion clinic, I think. Yeah. Yeah, he told her. Because if it's not already creepy enough.
I was going to say, I thought maybe there was a recycling program I wasn't hip to.
It is Canada. They're very forward-thinking up there. It's a very progressive society. 816-931-5534. Oh, there we go. 931, no one's there. But you are welcome to call in if you'd like. 931-KKFI. You know, this went all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada. I mean, at least in America, our Supreme Court decides whether or not corporations are people, you know, who should or should not have a gun or something like that. But the country's top court held that while she may have consented to the sex, she had not consented to unprotected sex. And by poking holes in the condoms first, he had committed sexual assault. What a loser. Right? I mean, just... Does it get any bigger than that?
Well, I mean, were they Catholic? Because that would make more sense to me.
It would. Catholics aren't supposed to use rubbers. Even though the Pope came out and said it's okay. As long as you don't use them for sex.
I think Catholics invented the rubber.
They did? No. Catholics invented the dualistic view on abortion. In that Catholics are opposed to abortion until their daughters get pregnant. And then you go to the clinic. But you're really angry about it.
It's don't ask, don't tell.
It's 15 after the hour that it is. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI. You are on the radio.
Hey, guys. Big Dog calling in.
What's up, Big Dog? Calling in with the white Christian male viewpoint.
Yeah, the straight, yeah. White. What? How'd that go? Hey, I got a quick question. I've been hearing you guys discuss the Tea Party on several occasions, calling them neo-Nazi fascists. Is that correct to assume?
No, we said, we were talking about with Russ earlier, that you couldn't have a nationalist party in America, but I think the Tea Party is probably as close to nationalism as we can get. Now, are there some members of the Tea Party who might be considered a little neo-Nazi, neo-fascist? Maybe. Is the organization overall a neo-Nazi group? No. Is it a nationalist organization? Yes. America first, baby.
Well, you said something along the line, and what threw me for a loop was when you were talking about the Tea Party and how they're against immigration. Mm-hmm. Also.
Yeah.
Does that stand by that?
That's basically true, is it not?
I believe they're against illegal immigration. I believe there is a defining characteristic that separates the two.
Okay.
Wouldn't you agree?
No, and point taken. Fair enough. But there's an issue in this country with all the kids that are here, all these illegal immigrants. I mean, the DREAM Act, you're hip to that. I mean, what are we supposed to do with all these children who may not be American citizens but have been raised in America, speak English with American accents and have gone to American public schools and grown up in this country? I mean, these people need to be addressed. Something needs to be done. Something also needs to be addressed in regards to the economic conditions in this country that are just bringing all these people from Mexico, or at least had at some point, and the way that the federal government doesn't seem to give a damn about it at all. Right. There's some issues.
Well, I think that's the biggest issue right there, Ben, is that they really don't give two hoots about it, and they don't get to enforce the laws that are on the books. You know?
But I mean, I think there's a point at which, okay, so don't confuse this, folks out there. I'm not saying that illegal immigrants are like drugs, but it's also illegal to have drugs in this country that come from Mexico or wherever. And those laws, they try to enforce, but they can't, right? They can't effectively enforce all those laws. I mean, it's illegal. Right. It's illegal to have methamphetamines brought in from Mexico. It's illegal to have, you know, undocumented workers come from Mexico. I mean, both those things are laws. Both those realities still happen.
Right. And I don't know, maybe so it is that we don't have the capacity to wage wars across the sea and guard our own borders. We've never seen the drug issue solved since the Reagan administration declared war on it. We had all that time to guard our borders, and it still didn't happen. So that would lead one to assume or think that there's more governmental involvement in such black market drugs.
Maybe. I mean, we could go that route if you want to, but I would say that the real issue with drugs is that Americans like to use drugs, right? That's why there's all these drugs here coming from places like Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's why the cartels in Mexico have so much power and have essentially been fighting a war for 10 years in the border states with the United States, because Americans like to use drugs. That's why drugs come here. Now, that's what needs to be addressed. I don't know that, you know, more laws, more police or more prisons will solve that. You know, it's the same thing with immigration. The American business community runs on cheap, undocumented labor. I mean, that's true. I mean, you see that from every restaurant you go to every roof that you see get put on a house, to every, a lot of construction projects. This country works, and the economy of this nation exists on cheap immigrant labor, and has since, I don't know when, the founding of the country, since time immemorial.
Well, to back that up, that's a lot behind the reasons why a lot of manufacturing jobs have fled the United States and gone into the outer regions, if you will, for the cheaper labor.
Actually, I've done the math on that. It's to boost the petrol boys once again. Do you know what it costs?
To boost the what?
The petrol boys again. To move the stuff around. The what they save in labor, they make up for in shipping.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
But there's no doubt within the Tea Party, there's a little bit of it's a little jingoistic. It's a little xenophobic. You know,
when it comes to the Tea Party, I don't see them as some sort of nationalist or whatever. I see, because I believe the origin, the beginning of the Tea Party, a semblance of it began back during the Clinton administration, carried its way through the Bush administration's two terms,
and has now,
I don't know, I guess come to a head, so to speak, during the Obama administration for out-of-control spending of the government. And, I completely back that up. I don't care what. Where you're coming from, Tea Party or not.
Right.
We got to rein in our expenditures and cut back on the government so we can gain some sort of fiscal sanity. I, just I don't know. That's a very tough economic situation that our government continues to heap upon our shoulders of our youngins. And it's
but
morally
is it,
incorrect.
Is it exactly
not
I mean,
be done that way.
Right. But, I mean, we're, you know, Big Dog, neither one of us are economists or bankers or anything like that. You know, you read this stuff on the internet. It said for the over 10 years, you read these articles that say, 2 weeks from now, imminent financial collapse in the United States. You know, dollar valued at zero next month. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? You've seen these articles.
Yeah. The Amaro is coming.
Right. These articles have persisted forever. Is the do the American dollars still buy stuff? Is the American economy, surprisingly enough, still the most resilient, robust, and powerful economy in the world? Yeah, it is. Mind-bogglingly enough, I mean, they literally raised the debt ceiling to infinity.
Yeah, I know.
They literally did that. It just auto-adjusts until March of 2015. Infinity for a whole year. So, and yet, it still continues on. I don't understand it. $17+ trillion in debt and counting, and the American dollar still buys stuff. It doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not,
when it comes to our way of having to stretch, you know, a dollar of living paycheck to paycheck.
Right. But the reality
having to mine those things that, you know, prioritize those things are more important, so you can at least rob Peter to pay Paul.
But
you know?
since World War II, America's economy has been based on fighting wars and fighting those wars on credit.
Right.
And that's what it's been. And that's what it is still today. And, you know, if we want to fundamentally address, you know, the problems of our economic situation, we have to go there. And I don't know that the Tea Party is willing to do that. I don't know that's the sacred cow of conservative politics is the budget.
Let me ask you.
But you know what I'm saying? Though? I mean, we can talk. But Big Dog,
like,
just
what have you
Big
seen
Dog, Big Dog,
or
Big Dog, Big Dog. Just acknowledge
type of
what it,
legislature
Big Dog.
That the Tea Party backs.
Oh my God! See, it's just getting somebody to acknowledge the situation. It's we can talk about out of control spending, but the sacred cow is the defense budget, and that's over half of the fiscal year's expenditures of the federal government, right? I mean, if that's something that we'd have to rein in. Or talk about honestly, right? Don't you think? I mean, but it's the sacred cow, just like, you know, entitlements are the sacred cow of the Democrats and liberals.
Right.
I mean, how do you move forward and talk about, you know, budget sanity, fiscal sanity, when the United States, you know, spends the money that we do on defense?
Now, I had made the comment to Michael T. one time that, you know, if I was president, I'd rein in everything. I'd bring everybody home. There wouldn't be nothing out there for us, because constitutionally we're supposed to stay out of foreign affairs. And to me, that makes a whole lot of sense, because now you're kind of picking your. And then, yes, people, that does include Israel.
Right. Constitutionally, okay? I mean, it was George Washington in his farewell address, you know, warned the future generations of American politicians to, you know, stay out of the entangling alliances of Europe at the time. And, you know, he was right. I myself am an isolationist. I live in Missouri. I'm very isolated from the rest of the world. If it's not for the internet or CNN, I mean, my view is a narrow one when it comes to the good old-fashioned Earth.
Well, jump on Earth Google. Get a bigger view.
But if that's what I'm saying. If it wasn't for the internet and CNN, you know, my view is very small. It was very small. But, you know, what the true problem is, and there's several different, you know, reasons for this, but primarily what we're talking about is the fact that the federal government takes money from the 50 states, you know, in the form of taxation, and then redistributes that money back to the states. Takes it from the individual people, funnels it up in corporations too, to a degree. Funnels it up and then redistributes it back out. That's wrong. The states should not depend on the federal government for funding. The federal government should depend on the states for funding. It has put our constitutional government off balance. The states are supposed to be, you know, because that is your closest link, you know, the local government, you know, your state and local government is your direct link to representation. And since it's basically been, you know, been made meaningless because of the national security state, you know, founded after World War II, that's given all this power to the federal government, and in the form of money and military, you know, the republic has suffered dramatically. And the only, I think the only solution to the constitutional crisis, because it is a crisis and it's very constitutional and it's happening right now, is to decentralize the power of the federal government. That's never going to happen under the current, you know, political paradigm that we live in now with, you know, huge federal deficits, budgets, and lobbying dollars. It's never going to happen.
Right. I know this might sound kind of over the top, but sometimes, in this particular case, I don't think any change is going to happen unless the Patriot tree gets a little bloody, you know what I mean?
Well, or at least until people get a little hungry. I mean, that's really what it is. There's an interesting...
be eating the bark off the tree then, huh?
Right, something like that. Well, it's pleasant to talk to you, Big Dog, and not have to argue.
All right. Have it,
too. All right, we'll take it that way. 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. I mean, you know, it's all confused, you know. People get stuck on buzzwords and wedge issues and all this other stuff. You know, and that's really what, you know, these divisive groups, you know, like the Tea Party or like, you know, what was once known as Occupy Wall Street. People become so entrenched in their political viewpoints that they're unable to communicate effectively with other people and find, you know, common ground that they agree upon. But you know, there was an opportunity for us to do so. But there's an interesting journal article, and I can't think of the author's name right now, where he basically says you can tie political instability directly to inflation and food prices. And that what happened in the Ukraine was based upon Ukrainian food inflation. I don't have any way to know that being true, and this is what the guy said. But what is true is that what's going on in the Ukraine right now might prevent them from having a bountiful harvest because the Ukraine is like the breadbasket of Europe. Grain, corn, it's fertile, like it's like the Midwest of Europe as far as agriculture is concerned. If agriculture prices, if price of wheat, corn, these other staples go up because of political instability in a place like Ukraine, it would just spread. And that brings us back here to America, that as long as people have food to eat, they're not going to go out and, you know, bloody up the Tree of Liberty or go protest or go to Washington. You got to be hungry to do that. You know, you don't do that when you're content and fat with bread and circus.
Right, I'm going to say is they've got food and TV. You might just have to wait till commercial to start the revolution.
Got Chick-fil-A and NASCAR, Bubba. I mean, that's the reality of it, though, folks. And the government knows that. I mean, why do you think the government... I mean, you know, all the entitlement programs, all the attacks that are made, the political attacks that are made. I mean, how long did George W. Bush have the House and Senate as president?
The whole time?
No. There was the first 2 years of his administration, he didn't have the Senate. In the last 2 years of his administration, he didn't have any of it, right?
Right.
But there were, you know, so that gives us 4 years. And he had all the political capital to do everything he could as far as being conservative and compassionate, like he liked to say he was, when it came to domestic agenda. What did he do? Did he slash entitlement programs? They get rid of, you know, social welfare redistribution from the federal government? No, they did Medicare plan whatever, and they actually increased entitlement programs and made things more. Why? Why would he do that? Why did they change the Medicare setup? Now, of course, it was a bonus to the pharmaceutical companies. So there's no doubt about that. But why did he do that? Why did he burden the federal government with more, you know, long-term deficit spending for entitlement programs? Because it's popular to do. And that's how the government keeps the people content. You know, welfare, food stamps. I mean, if the United States government didn't have social welfare programs, didn't have food stamps to give the poor, there would be political instability right now. The low end of the economic scale. There'd be people out there protesting, you know, with nothing left to lose, out there demanding a change. You'd have poor people in the streets like you see in these European countries, like you see in the Ukraine and Greece and all these other places. You know, people that are out there, it would be like an Arab Spring. Government doesn't care about that, you know? Entitlement programs are a long-term investment that the federal government makes in ensuring social stability and that there will be no, you know, torches and, you know, pitchforks outside of the White House or the United States Congress or Jeff City or Topeka. You know, keep the poor people fed and clothed and housed and basically marginalized. I mean, that's what the Great Society has done. It has created several perpetually, you know, impoverished generations of people who, you know, as much as Mitt Romney or, you know, a lot of the conservative party people would like to think, you know, these people are not politically motivated or engaged at all. I mean, you know, they might go vote from time to time, but it's not like we're talking about people, you know, there's not people accepting welfare checks and living off of food stamps and Section 8 housing that are like, oh, we got to go vote because we got to vote in our entitlement programs for another 2 years or 4 years or whatever it is, which is, I mean, what I just said there is something that, you know, conservative people would like to have you think. Now, do teachers unions or public sector unions operate under that same ideology of we're going to vote in people who are going to ensure that our jobs are protected? Absolutely. Now, that does exist. And you do have kind of a incestuous relationship there. That there's no doubt. But between people who accept in poor, you know, I mean, because this has been something that I've heard, you know, discussed over and over again. But poor people who live on welfare and food stamps are not participating with the political landscape. They're not doing anything. They don't care. Why would they? We're not, you know, generally people who live poor like that, you know, for their entire lives. I mean, some people use these programs as stepping stones in between certain stages of their life, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I support these programs because I don't think that it's, I don't think there's any other way to look at it, right? I mean, how are you going to say we're not going to feed people or clothe people? I mean, we've created a system of perpetual poverty. And, you know, I don't think the solution is to take away people's government sandwiches, remove the government cheese in between people's government bread. You can't do that overnight.
You may or may not know this, but they've already removed government cheese. You haven't seen the disclaimers in the grocery stores, I take it, because you don't go to those kind of grocery stores, but you're no longer allowed to buy cheese with WIC checks unless you're pregnant.
Well, WIC is just one program. That's just for women with infants and children, I think is what WIC stands for.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. But WIC, food stamps, you can buy anything with.
Women, infant, and children.
I mean, and the amazing thing is that I have a bunch of kids, and, you know, I'm pretty sure I could go get food stamps if I wanted. I bet my wife could. But we don't need to. I mean, some people just do that. They're like, oh, we get food stamps. That's what we do. I'm too proud to do that myself. Too proud to beg. But the nature of it all, you know, is pretty simple in that you keep people fed and entertained marginally. I mean, how much of do you think the digital TV transition had to do with that? I mean, giving poor people more channels to watch. I don't know. I might just be making that up. They did buy everyone who wanted a digital, you know, receiver box. Right? You can get your, remember that? 5 years ago, you get vouchers to go to a Radio Shack and get.
No, but I wish I knew about that.
Digital antennas for your TVs so you could watch the new digital streams. Yeah, but the government's going to keep people, you know, and they love it. That's an investment in social stability. And the Tea Party, if they were to get their wish and the government were to end entitlement programs, it would create revolution in this country. And it would not be pretty. Because we have to not romanticize this notion of revolution too much. Because it usually means guys with boots and face masks stomping people in the street. I mean, that's like day one of the revolution. You know, you get a couple of years removed and the reign of terror ends. And you shut down the guillotine. You chop off Robespierre's head. And you get back to, you know, some level of, you know, of decorum as far as how a society is supposed to run. But all you create generally in revolutions is power vacuums. And power vacuums get exploited. And that's what we're seeing in Ukraine right now. I mean, that's something that's taking place in Venezuela right now as they transition back to a non-people socialist and a corporate socialist reality, which is, you know, I mean, how much longer do you think Maduro is going to be the president of Venezuela? Would he be able to withstand a coup attempt from the United States Pentagon and State Department? I would go with no. I don't think he would be able to do that because he doesn't have the same cult of personality that Hugo Chavez had. So you create power vacuums and you insert, you know, new fascist entities into them. And by fascist entities, I just mean representatives, you know, of the corporate interest. That's all we're ultimately talking about. Woohoo.
The corporate state, you know, there was a great radio program I heard this week about the old Soviet Empire, how nobody ever got utility bills. And after it fell, they all these satellites, Georgia and, you know, Ukraine and stuff, they all started getting, you know, there were no corporations over in Russia before. And then after the fall, all these corporations moved in and they started trying to figure out how to bill these people. They had never been. I thought that was very interesting. And in old Soviet Russia, nobody ever got utility bills. If you needed to go to the hospital, you just went or whatever. You know, for all its downfalls, you know, bread lines, killing dissidents and stuff. But just they were talking about how all of a sudden they started mailing out utility bills one day, and all these people started. They were like, "What's this?" And they started getting bills for, you know, water and gas and sewer and electricity. And then all these well-to-do Russian families found that now 70% of their earnings went to just staying alive. And it was a great adjustment period.
No, and you can understand why a lot of people in Russia after, you know, the fall of the Soviet Union, the rise of, you know, gangster capitalism and the oligarchs in the 90s into, you know, Vladimir Putin's fascist times, you know, why they long for the old days when life may not have been vibrant or dynamic or mysterious or, you know, spontaneous, but it was stable. You knew what you got. You got what you got. I mean, just so we're clear here, I really like Vladimir Putin as the president of a country I do not live in. Because mm-hmm. He's like a freaking cartoon character.
He makes the morning news very, very fun.
He is an absolute cartoon character. I love Vladimir Putin as the president of a country I do not live in. At all. But I mean,
you know, I mean, yeah, there was not a lot of freedom in old Soviet Russia to speak out against the government. But I don't really feel like you can really speak out against the government here. I mean, you can. Nobody's going to put
you
in jail.
The United States? I mean, come on. Of course you can.
But it's funny if you know, I just saw this thing. Like, and it's so
we
true.
Take. I mean, we take free. There's so much freedom. Speech that we take, it's taken for granted.
You can put
country.
A tent city up in front of a Best Buy and camp out for a week to wait for a PlayStation, and you're a good, you know, you're a good citizen, consumer or whatever. And if you if you occupy a square in front of your government, in some government office, you know, you deserve to be tear gassed.
Okay. But I mean, I think you got to remember that.
I think we have to evacuate this building.
In some places of the world, you can get killed for, you know.
Well, my original point was
congregating and speaking freely.
My original point was if I would make a deal. If they never ever sent me a utility bill again, I would never say anything bad about the government. I think that's a pretty good trade-off. I'll keep my mouth shut, and then I'll just, you know, I'll go to the doctor when I'm sick, and I won't pay for water, gas, sewer, or electricity.
You just want to be paid off? You want to be a little bribe?
Who doesn't?
What's it? What's that?
I said, that's exactly what you just said. I mean, it's when people have to provide those services for themselves that they
get all indignant about the situation.
That's when they start. I forget what country it is that's roaming around. Like they had some protests where they were walking with pots and pans, beating on the pans, saying, "We have no food."
Sure.
And that's, like you said, that's what gets people indignant and out of shape.
No, I mean, like I said,
so Jesse's right. If you give me free utilities and free medicine, yeah, what the hell? Do whatever you want to do as long as you're not riding down the street like snatching
nothing.
People up. Now, if you do that like Gaddafi did, right, then maybe you catch one to the head as soon as people get a chance. But as long as you provide, you know.
Yeah, but for every, you know, 20 Jessies there are out there, there's like the one guy who's like, you know, going to say, that's not good enough for me.
No, right. Absolutely. That's and he's the one that gets snatched up.
Right. And so then the state has to start worrying about guys like that.
Right.
And it never happens. Because you always have people who are trying to, you know, manipulate and change things.
Right.
Because it's like,
you have that in any situation.
It's very
right?
interesting because you look at a place like Cuba. You know, Cuba is not really that bad of a life. I mean, the people have food, they have education, they have health care. You know, I mean, I'm just saying it could be a lot worse for those
and
people.
And muscle cars, don't forget.
Well, they don't have muscle cars. They have cars that are much older than that.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have anything after 1959 over there that's not German or Russian. But so I'm not trying to say that those people should be content with their reality. I'm just saying that it could be a lot worse for them. A lot worse for them. And they have everything they want, but they still have people all the time who are trying to hop on boats, come to Miami because they want to get a flat screen TV and a brand new Kia or something like that. They're not content with the 1959 Chrysler Belvedere or something like that. They want the brand new car. They want the consumer things. They think that that is freedom. You know, and there's all kinds of people listening in Lawrence right now who think that the idea of having everything taken care of for you and living in an island, you know, tropical Caribbean paradise sounds perfect. You know, and of course, everything is vintage and retro there too. So, you know, I know there's a lot of listeners in Lawrence who think that's just great. You know, think that that's just perfect. And there's people who, you know, like the ability to not be the same and not have that. But that's something that I just lose sight of in this country is how dynamic this damn place is. And, you know, people sit around and get freaked out about money and, you know, concerns here. But you can literally do whatever you want here compared to so many other places in the world.
It's true.
And it's something that Americans lose sight of because you see these industrious foreigners
right.
just pop up here and all of a sudden, you know, creating these little empires of gas stations or restaurants
right.
or whatever. And, you know,
that's the whole thing. That's the flaw in the system. You can do anything you want here. I mean, that's so they say, but you really need, you know, money.
No, people do it without money. It's you just need to have a drive and ambition to do it. And we look at this differently because we're from here and raised here.
Right.
You know, as opposed to somebody coming from a place where you couldn't just go buy property. You know, you couldn't just, you know, because of your last name or your status within the clan, you know, or the Clan is not what I was thinking of.
Yeah,
the tribe.
What are we talking about here?
Well, clan with a C, guy.
Right.
I mean, your status within the tribe. You know, might prevent you from being able to, you know, be the entrepreneur or the whatever that you wanted to be. But you know, that's there's no those same restrictions here in America. Are there restrictions here in America? I mean, all the BS bureaucracy that you have to deal with, the city government, and this, that, and the other thing. But it's not like you have to worry about, you know, the lady down at Regulated Industries killing your family or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It's just like
absolutely.
There's a process you have to go through. You go through it, and I mean, I guarantee you, we complain about the red tape here, but can you imagine what the red tape is like in Egypt?
I mean, absolutely.
I've heard, I mean, a place like Egypt that had before the Arab Spring, you know, they had 100%. They had no unemployment. You know, they had full employment or whatever if you wanted a job. So you go get some meaningless bureaucratic job that you were essentially were in charge of putting another stamp on a piece of paper. So you know, and I had a professor in college explain this to me. You go to a library in Egypt, and to check out a book, you got to talk to like 15 people because everyone's got a job. So if you want one, so you have to talk. So they give all these people these meaningless jobs to work for the government to be content. And you make a welfare wage, you know, whatever it is. And you're like the seventh guy who has to stamp the library card before you can check the book.
But see, that shows another layer of need, right? Because we were talking earlier about, you know, as long as you got food and shelter. I guess I made that point, right? That as long as you got food and shelter, you're not going to go crazy. But apparently there is another need, and that's some kind of purpose. Like, what's my job?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And then, like you said, it doesn't take long to see that that's meaningless. When you go like, wait a second, all I did was I stamped on top of his stamp in order to check a book out. So then right. You get upset about that. Yeah, I can see that. Sorry, I messed up your flow.
No, 816-931-5534 if you want to call in before Suicide 304 begins.
Which I want to say that I hate.
Hate.
Daylight savings time. I don't know what's the point of this thing anymore. You'll notice
I hate daylight savings
here about 1:30 or so
in the fall.
It's 2:30 because I had conditioned myself to look at my clock and go, that clock is an hour off.
Oh, you wanted to be here at 1:30.
And it wasn't an hour off.
Right.
It was
correct?
It was correct. And then I woke up later going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. So, sorry I'm late, fellas.
You're right on time.
Right, I know. I never get to spend time with you guys if I get here at 2:30.
I've tried to figure out the meaning or the purpose of daylight savings.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's to make us all happier. I'm pretty sure it's to squeeze another, you know, hours worth of labor out of the working man
somewhere, right?
Right. I mean, what else could it possibly be for?
I still think it's
saving electricity.
It's just a way to like exert control. Like we have this massive mind experiment where we all just agree that an hour went ahead or back.
Except for Arizona and Indiana, or is it Indianapolis?
Are they still on that? I don't know if they're still doing that anymore. I never hear them talk about that anymore.
The Arizona finally accepted daylight savings time and Martin Luther King's birthday.
I would think they would take the daylight savings before the Martin Luther King Day.
Maybe so. But I'm not sure the real reason behind it. It has something to do with being awake during daytime.
Because I'm always curious how that affects, I mean, how much commerce is affected. Like, suddenly in Europe every day you're doing something at a certain time. And
I mean, maybe at one point it cut down on the use of whale oil in our lamps or
right.
something like
That's
that.
That's what I mean. There's no...
Where we're at now, I'm not sure. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
I missed a couple minutes of your conversation because I was listening on my phone.
Okay.
But I made a petition to stop daylight savings time a few years ago.
Did you have any takers? Anybody sign up?
Everybody.
Oh, everybody? Well, what happened?
Everybody I asked was like, yo, I'll sign it.
Where do you take that petition to then?
I didn't get that far. I started looking at why it was done, because my mom always said it was for the farmers. But then I thought farmers lived for a long time before daylight savings time.
What the hell do farmers care what time it is? They're farmers.
It was done by a British prime minister guy in 1915 to boost economy. I don't remember where I found that out, but when I found that out, I quit trying, because it's just man-made manipulation to piss us off.
Yeah, they just want to get some more work out of the laborer from the looms or something like that, right? The British industry.
Maybe I assume the stockholder or whatever, and all the retail businesses.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Parliament or whatever. I don't know. Fifth Avenue.
Oh, I have no idea. Yeah. Maybe the rest of the world does. I wasn't prepared to have a daylight savings.
So wouldn't eventually our calendars wouldn't add up? I mean, you'd have to think that eventually somehow we'd...
That's all jacked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, even the Jewish people who follow the moons, they don't even know what date it is. Man, they're all cutting each other's throats. Yeah.
Well, the Jewish year is like 5,832 or something like that, isn't it?
It depends who you ask. Some say it's like 602 and, 57, I've heard. There's, major parties right now.
The Iranians say it's the 6,000th year or something like that. They're way ahead.
Yeah.
But it is pretty relative.
But they count from like that incident 300, right?
Something like that.
I let their mop along.
It's hard to explain.
We don't know what time it is. We don't know.
We pretend like we do.
It's about that time.
It makes us feel good. I look good knowing, like, I know what's going on, you know? My friends respect me. But, yeah, I think we've all been deceived.
You think?
I think so.
It was probably a year or two ago. There was, I guess, the Russian Federation had their entire jurisdiction spanned 13 time zones, and they had to get rid of two of them so they could fit all of their commerce into one business day.
Wow.
Hey, business is important when you're a government. I mean, it's got to be important, you know?
Yeah, we'll figure it out someday. I mean, you could just stop following daylight savings time. You could just be like, now I'm going to work an hour later.
Well, if you notice I haven't called you in a few months, it's because,
your clock's way off.
Following it, right. Yeah. Thanks for starting early tonight, guys.
Absolutely. All right, man, take care.
God bless you guys.
Absolutely. You too, sir. Kitch out there somewhere. Is that Kitch? That
was pretty cool. Just show up for work an hour late. And
I always wondered why school didn't start an hour after sunrise. You know, just make
whenever
it real simple. Forget the exact time, because it.
But then that means that every day the school would change by a minute.
Right. Still an hour after sunrise. You wait till the chicken crows, and then you got an hour to get to school.
I remember
an official chicken.
Remember being in high school and having your freshman year having to ride the bus. You had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever. I remember having to get up so damn early to go to school.
That's when I got to get my kid up.
I know, it's crazy. I mean, it really is crazy getting conditioned to just be up that early. I mean,
and there's really no reason for it. They've done all these studies that say it would be much better if they just sleep. Let them sleep some more and then come in at 9.
An hour after the sun's up. Because if you make it 7:32 every day, it throws your biometrics all out of whack.
I think that's part of the point, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. They're there,
keep us slightly out of phase.
It's like when they do those shelter-in-place drills in schools.
Duck and cover.
Well, not duck and cover, but where you no flight, no fight.
Right. The lockdown drills.
Yeah.
The code reds.
So you go against everything that you're not. I mean, people, when they're presented with danger, either fight or they flight. They either kick some ass or run away. I prefer to run away myself. But, some people, you look at these schools when they have these lockdown drills, they essentially make the kids go against their instincts. And that's, I believe, the whole reason they do them, is to try to decondition people to do what comes to them instinctually, because you're pointing a gun at them saying, don't move. I'm the good guy, but you can't leave.
But don't you?
And here's a gun in your face.
Because I struggled with this too when I first heard they were doing this with my kids. I was like, what? And But there is something to the logic that if some guy walks in the front door shooting,
it's way easier to shoot people holding still than scatter.
Yeah, but it's a lot easier to not get shot if you're not running down the hall trying to, quote, run away. Yeah, and the guy's picking you off as you're walking down the hall.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know that, I mean, you just, some of the stories of these lockdown drills that they do seem a little much. I mean, we're literally, the cops show up kind of to terrorize the people there. And you're just going, well, are we learning
how?
How
much of that is just the Nimrods who have jobs? As opposed to that being like across the board the way. Because the only reason I say that is because we never, and my kids tell me a lot of stuff that goes on at their school. So I their parents there a lot and everything. So I would have heard if they that's how they went down with their drill. Because usually when they do the drill like once or twice a year, I think it's like once a year. But they do the thing, everybody stops what they're doing, go get in the coat closet or whatever, and like, so if somebody looks in the room, nobody there, and they keep moving. You know what I mean? But you slow that guy down, and this doesn't sound good at all, if he's got to go wandering through each room. So, yeah, maybe he gets that classroom. That's not so good. But now he's in a
I just think it's interesting
detour.
That the lockdown drills are basically telling you to go against your instincts, which either to, you know,
and it's far harder to hit a moving target than a stationary.
But so do fire drills, right? They go against your instinct because your instinct is fire. Oh my God, run! No, we don't want to do that.
You got to calmly do it.
We want to proceed orderly out of the building so that everyone can get out. A and we know who's where and we can.
But you're still leaving the.
I mean, because if they turn into the first grade class and start shooting that class up, that's going to suck. And it already sucked when the dude walked in the door, but. We can say, hey, all these people were safe and accounted for, and not be like, oh, we don't know what's going on. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough job. I spend a lot of time at my kids' school, and so
they need to give the teachers and the children
all weapons.
They're
not anyway planning to
arm the children.
Desensitize
the only way we're
our kids
really be
to
able
their
to.
Ability to do this or that. You know what I mean? That may be something that's happening at some systematic level. I mean, Rockefeller might be sitting back
going,
like,
if I'm not saying that
this will make the people ready for something.
I'm just saying that that's the effect of it. Regardless of who comes up, I mean, the DHS grant money, I'm not saying that the guy who's writing those checks is evil or there's somebody, you know, in the white. I mean, I'm not saying that, though. I'm just saying the reality of what comes about from these lockdown drills is what we just said. People go against their own natural instincts. And, I mean, so much of what is being done to children anymore today. I mean, little Billy's got a lot of energy. Little Billy has a hard time concentrating in class. Little Billy, you know, consumes lots of sugar and has been watching, you know, the schizophrenic nature of TV since he was a baby. Little Billy has all kinds of problems. Little Billy needs to take ADD medications because little Billy can't control himself. Little Billy's a pharmaceutical patient now. You know, I mean, his little boys, you know, kind of on a natural thing, are supposed to run around and not be able to pay attention to stuff for very long. But for whatever reason, we're now calling that a disease and giving kids drugs, going against the natural order of things, right?
No, I would.
That's kind of where I'm at with that. That's what I'm saying.
On board with that, for sure.
My thought process there. Telling children.